Today's podcast is brought to you by our good friends, Heartland Flags, heartlandflagpoles.com. Check them out. They have every flag you could think of, every team. You're looking for a Cyclone flag for you, your house, your basement. Get on there, check it out. Or if you have a Kansas fan, if you have a Jayhawk fan who has been talking a lot of smack over the years and you want to pay him back after Iowa State's big victory down in Fog Allen, get on heartlandflagpoles.com. Order a flag, ship it down there directly to them. I think it'd be a nice little touch. Check them out. Give them a call, 1-800-340-1157, or you can always stop in at their store, 3719 Southwest 9th Street here in Des Moines. Welcome, fanatics, to another episode of Two Shades of Gray. Yes, that's right. You guys heard it correctly. We have switched the name from the Gray Cast to Two Shades of Gray. If you don't like it, too bad. Deal with it. Our fearless leader, Chris Williams, said that's what we're going with. And so, Rob, that's what we're doing.
Well, my hashtag flippant hashtag thing worked out, I guess.
There you go.
It seems to have better better feedback. Appreciate a couple other ideas that some folks threw out there, too. But I guess we decided to keep the name change in-house.
Williams says Two Shades of Gray worked out perfect. Obviously, the movie, you know, they'll play on the name of the movie, yep, and book. But he says because we are polar opposite people, and therefore the two shades is very fitting.
Which is a great example because, you know, I'm sure at some point we'll have a fist fight on air. But
yeah,
we've been pretty simpatico, you know, here, yeah, while we go about things. So
we're
showing people. We're showing people that you can be very different people with very different mindsets about certain things and still get along and be friends and that kind of stuff.
Share whiskey together later on.
Damn right. Or scotch.
Well, it's scotch, whiskey, bourbon. I'm not picky.
Yeah.
I'm not picky at all.
Good stuff, though.
So how about them clones, huh? Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Four-game winning streak, Rob. Won 5 of 6 now, alone in second place, at least for the time being. Or no, I think West Virginia won last night, right? So it's still tied for second. Let's be honest. Before that Kansas game, Iowa State was sitting at, what, 14-8? 14-8. Did you see this coming, Rob?
Obviously, I did, because last week I picked them to go 2-0. And we didn't obviously get to predict what would happen in this game. And I was sort of vacillating a bit on it. I was like, boy, man, Texas Tech. But once they lost at West Virginia, wasn't that the previous game, or am I making that up?
Yep, West Virginia, double overtime.
They're so close to getting that win. They dropped to 5-9 at that point. I think the writing on the wall for them was they're an NIT team. So what kind of – are you going to get their best shot? I don't think they got their best shot last night, but I thought they got a pretty darn good shot from Texas Tech. That's just a tough, hard-nosed, talented, well-coached team. And I just – so I kind of thought, man, Texas Tech, their place – you mentioned it to me earlier, and we'd seen it, that, you know, Iowa State lost the heartbreaker there last year, and I think they lost 2 or 3 or 4 there.
Yep.
You know, so it's been lesser Texas Tech teams. It had beaten pretty darn good Iowa State teams there. But as the game was starting, I got the Cyclones by one. I got them by one. And
you're way off, Rob.
So I'm on a roll.
They only won by two. Yeah. No, I mean – I'd be lying to you, 100% lying to you, if I said it when they were 14-8 that they'd be sitting here now tied for second in conference, winning 5 of 6. We sat here and did the Two Shades of Gray last week, and I predicted them to lose at Kansas State.
Understandable.
And after I got done doing the podcast and listening to your argument, I also had somebody else call me up and talk some sense into me, and I changed my pick on the Facebook Live. I picked Iowa State to win that game. And I think previously, too, when we went through the schedule, I picked us to go down to Lubbock and lose because I thought Texas Tech, we need this win. But as the day went on yesterday, I mean, it just comes down to the simple fact, Rob, Iowa State's a better team. They got better players,
yep,
and these are seniors too. And the thing is Iowa State's now won 5 games in the Big 12, first time since Jamal Tinsley's senior year where they've won 5 or more games on the road in Big 12. And that doesn't happen unless you have seniors that have been through the ringer, don't get frazzled on the road. And these guys, not only have they played a lot of games, they played a lot of big games, and they have confidence that, hey, 1-point game, 2-point game, overtime game, it doesn't matter. Give me the ball. I'm going to go get a bucket, and we're going to win this game. I mean, they kind of have that. I mean, you see, you know, Monte, some of the big shots he's hit over his career.
Yep.
And shoot, even Matt Thomas hitting that little first shot in overtime, that little pull up on the corner. Those are big time tough shots these guys are hitting. And that's a shot that Matt Thomas wouldn't hit as a freshman or sophomore. But he's experienced now. He's a senior. He's got confidence in himself. And I think we're seeing that this year. And man, I'm excited. I'm not ready to say this team's going to finish second place, but I'm not ready to count them out now because they're rolling.
Absolutely. And I mean, this team is better on the road than any team since the Renaissance started with Hoiberg.
No question.
What's five road wins now?
Five, yeah.
And I believe that the teams that won Big 12 titles outright, you know, the Eustace coach teams in 2000, 2001.
Won six.
Five and six.
Yep.
I think is how that went.
Correct.
And you've got a chance to go to West Virginia. West Virginia's shown itself to be vulnerable. Now, I mean, early on, it looked like they were going to be a team that was really – them and Baylor were really going to be right there within a game or two lurking with Kansas. I think it was 13-8 when they went into that game, actually. So, I mean, you could – because I remember thinking, oh, my gosh, they're going to fall to 13-9. What's going to happen? Well, then they're going to have to go beat Texas.
Yeah.
And then they're going to have to probably win at Kansas State or Texas Tech, get all the home wins. What you said about the seniors is very, very telling as well, because those guys are – I think that's a big reason why they're so good on the road, why they don't get rattled. Well, but it's also maybe one of the reasons why they can stink at times for so long, you know, and because they kind of know deep down that
they can turn up, they can flip a switch.
And look, it's an imperfect team. We know that because in particular because of the five spot.
Yep.
But Solomon Young.
Which is shoring up right now.
Yeah, when you've got a freshman who struggles as mightily as he did early in that game, not holding on to the ball or just missing a couple in there and really just looking a little bit lost, and then he hits big free throws down the stretch. He ends up with, I think, eight boards.
Yep.
And Holden hasn't lately, but he's capable of adding a few boards here and there and some toughness, and Bowie's done that at times as well. That spot's looking a lot better, and obviously that's a big reason why the Cyclones are on this roll, and I like it to continue. I mean, I think when all is said and done, this team could, you know, depending on the Big 12 championship, as they like to call it, the Big 12 tournament, as we call it, I don't think a five seed is out of the question. If you go and win that thing, and if you've actually won some games down the stretch, Baylor and or, you know, I can't imagine them both beating Baylor at home and winning at West Virginia.
Correct.
But I could see them winning either one of those games.
Yep.
And I think they get Oklahoma State as well as the Cowboys are playing. Nonetheless, I think you get that done at home.
Rob, if we're going to drink the Kool-Aid right now, and Iowa State's running the table – they're winning the next three games, and then they're going to go to Kansas City and win the next three. So that's six in a row. That'd be 10 games in a row. Iowa State go up to what for a seed? Three seed?
I don't think they could jump that high just because of their overall record, but I think a four.
They would essentially beat Baylor, top 10 team, West Virginia, top 10 team, West Virginia and Kansas probably in the Big 12 tournament to get there. I mean, you put those four wins in a row plus Kansas
plus
back in there.
Kansas.
I don't know. But once again, I'm not predicting that. I don't think they're going to win the next six games.
Even I don't.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun to talk about because here we were 2 weeks ago. We're talking about, man, they got to win a couple games. Otherwise, if they don't, they could be playing on the playing game. They're going to be right on that bubble-ish a little bit. And now we're sitting here. I think they're seven as of today, and they're sneaking towards a six line. A six, to me, would be perfect. If Iowa State could get that six spot you know, the five always scares people, right? Because the five versus 12 is just that spot no one wants to be in. So, but no, I mean, there's not too many teams in the country, I would venture to say probably any, that start four seniors, bring two seniors off the bench, a junior and a sophomore off the bench, too. I mean, yeah, they're starting one freshman now, but that kind of experience, and I know Bowie and Holden, this is their first time playing Big 12 basketball, but they're still seniors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you do that, you go on the road. This is not, they've been on the road. They've been there. It's a business trip for them, so to speak, anymore. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's the plane rides don't bother them as much. They're used to all that. Staying in the hotel, nothing surprised these guys. And that's why at the end of the game, when me and you and the rest of Iowa State fans are freaking out because it's a 1-point game, they did it.
Yeah.
They didn't freak out.
Yeah. No lights are too bright and no stage. You know, they welcome the biggest stage possible, you know, wherever it's at, whatever's going on. And you saw that in overtime. How many times have we seen Iowa State in recent years? They have a little bit of a lead, and then that game gets sent to overtime on the road.
Yep.
You know, so you almost just in your mind or in your heart, you kind of go, oh, man, that's it. Because it went to overtime. They're not going to do it.
Can we say that the officiating was below average at the end of the game?
Well, I liked.
I hope Brett Bloom's listening right now, because Higgins called the game. So Bloom was overly excited the entire game. I don't even think he watched Iowa State. I think he just watched Higgins running around the court and saw the calls he made. But
that could be. HD hair.
I thought that crew really struggled, especially at the end. I mean, Iowa State got called for some ticky-tack fouls down the stretch that I wouldn't agree with.
Nobody said it better. I've ever since the Cubs won their world title in my gambit or my strategy to help them get through the tough times was to walk all the time. I did some walking during this game because it was nice weather.
Yeah.
So I got a good dose of John Walters and Eric Heft, which is always great.
So you didn't watch it?
I watched some of it. But in the overtime, I listened to a lot, and one of the things Eric exclaimed is, every time Texas Tech drives, it's an Iowa State foul.
Oh, man.
And it was.
Yeah, it was.
And, you know, I went back and watched it, and, you know, man, there are some that are just right on the edge, and it's every single time.
Yep.
I mean, to their credit, they hit their free throws really well. I mean, Keenan Evans, we didn't talk about this, but what a great job by Naz and others on him.
One field goal. Not even till overtime.
Yep.
This guy had been their best player.
Yeah, he'd been on fire. What was it, 24 points a game over the last five or something like that, and really controlled him and controlled Ross, too. I mean, you had, Livingston, Stevenson, some of those guys knocking in some shots they don't always hit, and they need to hit if Tech's going to be in games, let alone winning them. But, you know, just a really nice effort. That's a really good team. They're 5-10 in the league, but that's a really good basketball team.
That's a team now that's lost by 1 point at home to Kansas,
yep.
Lost in overtime to Iowa State by two, lost in double overtime to West Virginia.
Beat West Virginia at home.
Yeah, beat Baylor at home.
Yep.
So they're not far from being a 7-9 team right now.
Yeah.
Or 7-8, whatever they would be. So, yeah, I agree. They're a good team. It's a good win down there. And Rob, I want to talk about this too. You said you were walking. Were you watching the end of the game before you went on your walk? Before it went to overtime?
Yeah, yeah.
How crazy was the last minute and a half of that game?
It was really nuts. And like you said, when you get that shot that sticks in the heel of the rim and the
play
side
the game. Just unbelievable that Steve Prohm would draw that up and that Monte would know to throw up a brick so bad that it gets stuck in the corner, knowing Iowa State had possession. You get a fresh shot clock under 27 seconds, and then it forced them to foul. And it was just beautiful, beautiful basketball.
It was a nice long two, too, to make sure that it happened.
About 8 seconds left of the shot clock, and I didn't love the shot when he shot it, but once it got stuck in the hoop, I said, you know what, Monte, I'm never going to doubt you again. You know what you're doing, buddy. But even before that, you know, Babb had the turnover where I think Monte threw it back to him, and it was kind of a scramble late with 5 seconds going to the shot clock.
Mm-hmm.
Texas Tech gets a steal, they throw it down, and they got a wide open alley-oop, and the guy misses the layup. And let's be honest, everybody listening right now, when you were watching that game and they throw that alley-oop, you're thinking, shit,
we just lost.
That's it. We're going to lose.
Yep.
You know, they're going to make this layup, and we're going to lose. And Iowa State was up 8 points with 3 minutes to go in that game, 4 minutes to go, and Monte hit that three of 68-60, I want to say. So everyone at that point is thinking, well, dang it, you know.
Yeah, as soon as that pass is thrown, you're like, that's what you're like. But then the way that he caught it, you could see he was a little bit off.
He was too far away from the hoop.
Yep. And he was like, that's probably not going to go. Okay, it didn't go in.
Yeah. And then Solomon grabbed that ball, which – I would say for a majority of the game reminded me a lot of Iowa State playing at Texas. And that it seemed like Texas Tech got every loose ball and every almost steal, all those rebounds. For a good part of the second half, the only time Texas Tech was scoring on offense was via second chance opportunities or near steals that they would get a kick back out for. So I was thinking to myself, gosh, this could be one of those Texas games all over again where Iowa State's going to lose by two because they're just getting those loose balls. But to Iowa State's credit, they kept fighting and they kept putting themselves in good position. They got the win. How good was Matt Thomas and Naz Long in the first half, by the way?
I mean, absolutely carried them. I mean, what did they have? How many three-point – when they had like – they got their first two-point field goal like more than halfway into the first half, I think.
Well,
or it was closer.
Matt hit it to tie it up 11-11.
That's right.
The jumper in the line.
But other than that, it was mostly threes for the – you know – the big chunk of the first half scoring.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think those two combined had, what, 27 or so of Iowa State's 30-some points in the first half. They were great. And, they, you know, we haven't even talked about Deontay Burton. 2 points all game, 2 points, fouls out.
Four boards.
Deontay had been so consistent lately. Mm-hmm. No more bad Deontay. And I don't even know if bad Deontay in this game was fair. He just, you know, he wasn't making shots. And, you know, just he never seemed to get quite into the flow of the game. And for him to go down there, score 2 points, and Iowa State to win the game is really hard to believe.
It is. And I think it's fair to differentiate now between bad Deontay, whereas the implication is that it's bad decision-making or he's in a bad spot. I don't think he was in a bad spot that game. I thought all the effort was there. You know, he went to the glass hard. He did get a block. He didn't get the steals he's usually been getting. In fact, it was incredible how few turnovers I was, since that's been their MO to really put it on teams to turn him over a lot. You know, Tech ended up with six.
Yeah.
Turnovers. I mean, for a team to do that against Iowa State, who's been turning over Kansas at, what, 19, 20
21.
A game? 21. And turning over basically everybody, you know, minimum of 13, I think, during this stretch. It says a lot. You know, Zach Smith had that double-double for him. There's always somebody for them that you're just not sure who did. Todrick Gotcher used to be the guy.
Yep, he did. Texas Tech shot 10 more shots than Iowa State yesterday.
Yeah. And the overall rebounding differential wasn't that big, and I know people are, you know, but they got, I think, 13 on the offensive glass and converted a number of them. But, really nice win and a really good point about Burton, because he had been, what, more or less averaging 16-8
mm-hmm.
and pretty much staying – it wasn't 30-6 to 25-9 it was pretty consistent along those lines. I'm sure he'll get back on track that way. And for them to win, I just imagine what it does, because I know that guy cares a ton. And, you know, if they lose that game in overtime and he looks at his stat line and he knows that he missed some shots that he normally would make, or he just wasn't quite totally in sync the way he wanted to be, you know, you wonder what that does to his psyche going forward. For them to win it, I think, you know, he's just going to be primed for another big game with another huge one coming with the Baylor Bears in Ames on Saturday.
Well, when you play bad but you win, it keeps those idiot trolls on Twitter away from you. Because let's be honest, those they come out when you lose those games. If you play bad and you lose, you get those people. And I don't care who you are. You turn on your phone, you see that stuff, it puts you in a bad mood.
Yeah. How many times has Matt Thomas gotten that in his career?
Oof. Not as much as he did the first 2 years, but yeah, still too much.
I mean,
one time is too much, Rob. One time is too much.
Yeah, there's no reason to tweet, especially if it's an at.
Yeah, if you just tweeted, Rob, from your account and said, man, Matt Thomas is really struggling to shoot the ball today, perfectly fair, I think. If you tweet at him and you attach his name to your tweet, completely uncalled for.
Or even if it's just so-and-so sucks.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just – and I understand a lot of that isn't coming from people your age, let alone my age. You know, but at the same time, some of it is.
Yeah.
And that just blows my mind. I mean, you're really that wanting in your own life that you're going to have to totally run down a student athlete? I don't get that kind of stuff at all. We kind of veered into that, but you're right.
But when you win, it's all forgiven, right? It's all good. Yeah. It doesn't matter. And you know what? We're going to need Deontay to be Deontay going forward. Mm-hmm. So that was a big win to get that without him. And you know, the effort thing with him too is I saw, especially to start the second half, I feel like at halftime they must have had a talk with him like, hey, Deontay, we need you to just kind of step it up a notch here. He came out, almost got a steal in the first possession against Texas Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Just barely missed it. I think they got it. Did a great job, I think, blocking or altering a shot, getting the rebound, but then it got stolen from him and laid up.
Yeah.
So it was one of those where he tried to get momentum going and it never quite got going for him, and then he obviously got in foul trouble and fouled out of the game. But I'm not worried about him at all.
Yeah, which anybody knows in life. I mean, what did Matt Thomas do the last game? You know, what was he, 0 for 4 from 3? I mean, everybody, if you expect every single player, has LeBron James had bad games? I mean, really bad games? He sure has.
Sure.
I mean, so sometimes we get a little bit, you know, how in the world can this great player, or this really good player, have this just horrible game? Well, you know, if you play enough games, you're going to have some horrible ones.
You get, and if you get out of rhythm just a little bit, these guys at this level are so good.
Yep.
They're so good that if you're not on your A game, you can get exposed pretty quickly. I mean, they're long, they're lengthy, everything about it.
Yep.
All right, so Iowa State comes back into town this week. Baylor lost 5 straight to Baylor.
Yeah.
Some heartbreakers.
Those well-timed Scott Drew timeouts again. That always are. Every matchup I ask Monte Morris about how tough it has been to be at Baylor, and he mentions, he just throws in there the, man, he – calls those timeouts, and at the time I think they're crazy, but they're always right. You know,
yeah.
They go on a thing.
You know, Jamie Dixon did that a little bit too in that TCU mm-hmm. game. He kept calling timeouts, and I'm sitting here wondering, why the heck did he just call timeout there? And then they came back, and they would hit 2 threes in a row, and I'd be like, okay, but Iowa State was always able to weather that and then just come right back and score on them.
Yep.
I still think that Iowa State game down in Baylor for 36 minutes was as good as Iowa State's played all year, but unfortunately, the last 4 or 5 minutes, I think they might have made one field goal and they struggled to finish it off.
Mm-hmm.
This team now has become a lot better at finishing games off. They're not going those huge stretches down the end. I mean, last night they struggled a little bit to score for a period there,
yeah.
But they still, when they needed to get buckets, they did. I like the Clones, Rob. I think they're going to win this game. I think they're going to break that 5-game stretch losing streak to Baylor, and I think they're going to. And then, obviously, they got Oklahoma State, which I think they win. I think they go play at West Virginia for a shot at second place in the Big 12.
Yeah, and I'm going to keep riding my my hot streak of picking them. I totally agree. I think it opened eyes with how good they can play when they went to Baylor and had that lead late.
Yep.
And we did a narrow lead late, but played so well, like you said, for about basically 36 minutes. Again, a much better team, more complete team. Baylor is always a tough matchup for Iowa State because of just how skilled and athletic their bigs are, and mm-hmm. they can keep running guys in at you. You know, not just Motley, but you've got you know, a number of guys. And you know, I think one of the keys on Saturday is LeCount. Stop him from going off.
Yep.
'Cause some of those games, you know, it's been somebody going off from the perimeter too for Baylor.
Well, that's the big key is Iowa State's better at the guards, and they have to play better at that position. If Baylor is able to kind of close that gap with him, like you said, they have a huge advantage down low with some of their bigs.
Yep.
Then Iowa State's in real trouble. But if Iowa State can maintain the advantage with the guards, and then let's be honest, it's in Hilton. The crowd, I think, is going to be incredible because mm-hmm. I think the crowd is done this high right now with this team winning 5 of 6. I like Iowa State. Didn't mean to interrupt you.
I'm right there with you. I can't pick against them at this point. The way that they're going, as well as they're playing, is as together as they've been. I mean, we had some of those moments, you know, you do in every game. You know, the Texas game was a real downer because you figure you ought to beat that team. Even though it has some talent, you just need to beat that team.
They have no guards as well.
And they didn't have an atmosphere. No one at the Irwin Center is excited about Texas basketball right now for good reason. So imagine if you got that one, but you didn't. So you can – huge image enhancement if you can add another win over top 10 team in Baylor. And I think they're going to be able to do it. And they might get out rebounded by 20, but they'll turn Baylor over. And I think they'll continue this. I think the hot shooting from Matt and Naz is going to be pretty consistent down the stretch.
Yeah.
I mean, not like every game, but I think it's going to be pretty consistent. And I think they're going to drop in a lot. And Monte was 3 of 5 from 3 last night, too. And, you know, Donovan Jackson can
– bricked in one yesterday.
That was – hey, when you're hot, though
– it doesn't matter.
That's when those go down.
All that matters is it goes in.
Mm-hmm.
It's all that matters. Yeah, I love Donovan Jackson. If he could just
– Nick Weiler-Babb, too, with the huge three. Yeah, he had one for a long time.
Yep. I still say Nick Weiler-Babb. He reminds me so much of Matt Thomas' freshman and sophomore year. I'm not talking skill set or what kind of player they are, but from a confidence level. Like, you watch Nick Weiler-Babb, you know the talent's there. You know he's a good player.
Yep.
Just like you knew Matt Thomas was his freshman sophomore year. But there's no consistency there, right? He might be really good one game, and then 2 or 3 games he stinks.
Yep.
I shouldn't say stink. Not very good, right? Listen to me saying it's terrible.
No, it wasn't. There was no at.
Yeah.
At
no. but what I'm saying, to me, it's a confidence thing with him. Last night, he had 2 open threes in the corner when Iowa State did a great job ball movement, swinging it around wide open. He didn't shoot it. And if you go watch the guy shoot the ball, he can shoot the ball. It's just a confidence thing with him right now. And then when he does attack, he kind of, you know, finishing and attacking. But I think Nick Weatherbab is going to be one of the huge keys for Iowa State next year. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to need to rely on him a lot. Wouldn't surprise me if he played point guard at some points to bringing the ball up the court. So hopefully as the year goes on here in these big games, he can continue to get more and more confidence, because next year he's going to be one of the guys. He is. I mean, he's going to be one of the top four guys on that team.
Yeah, so. And he can do it on the defensive end, too. We've seen, especially when they go into kind of pressure situations, he can he's really good at getting in the passing lane, getting a steal.
I just spilled coffee all over my shirt, Rob.
That's why I wear T-shirts.
This is ridiculous. I'm like a child.
Just get one of those. You got one of those sticks here? You can... You're probably wearing an undershirt, so you can.
I am, but it's just, you know, this is just.
It's because you're sitting back. Like, see, I'm sitting forward.
Yeah,
I spilled my coffee, it would just be on my
your jeans.
Yeah.
See, this is where you're the veteran here, and I'm just a rookie. You know what?
It's where I should. Gristled part
there's
comes
not.
In.
There's not one human being alive, I think, that spills more than me. And I have friends that, if they're listening right now, would agree.
My son.
Oh
my
gosh.
My son spills more than you.
My first or second job growing up was at Quiznos, and I know the owner real well, and he still to this day, whenever I see him, jokes about how I used to just drop everything when I worked there. I'd go get the meat from the back, and I'd bring it up in front of the customers. I'd just drop the meat all over.
Like a big vat of mayo.
Oh, my gosh. It was just terrible. I was fumbling the ball like Greg Coleman against Baylor. It's just terrible. Sorry to go off on that topic. I'm just mad because I'm mad because of my...
It'll be fine. You can get that out. No. I'm confident you can get that out.
Yeah, but I got to wear the shirt the rest of the day.
OxiClean.
I don't have any OxiClean on me, Rob. I wasn't planning on going home after this.
Get that under the faucet here in the office. You know, just throw a little dish soap on it.
And just scrub it?
Yeah.
And then I'll have some wet spots on my shirt for a while.
If there's any place to have a wet spot.
Right on my chest. Be a great look. all right, so we got clones winning the next two, going into Morgantown with a chance for second place. Rob, Iowa State made a big hire yesterday.
They did.
What do you think about it?
I think it should be very exciting for wrestling fans who have not had a lot to be excited about in the recent years, other than a Kyvan Gadsden national championship, individual national championship. I've mentioned this in other areas and at other times, but first of all, Kevin Jackson is talk about a class act.
Yeah.
And I mean, a two-time world champion, Olympic gold medalist, guy who helped Iowa State to their last national title. It's hard to believe it was that long. But I mean, a great Cyclone, and you know, I really hope he is involved in an administrative capacity down the stretch. I think one of the things that Kevin Jackson could do, because he coached freestyle at the Olympic Center. He was always coaching elite athletes. That was his coaching, because he hadn't been a head coach in college till the Iowa State job. Then he's faced with guys that really have to develop from ground zero. I'm not sure that was his forte, but when you had potential champions like David Zabriskie, Varner.
Kevin Jackson, like you said.
Yeah, and Gadsden, those guys got their full potential, bloomed through all that. And I think that was kind of the deal. Now, Dresser is an old school kind of, you know, wrestled at Iowa under Iowa State great Dan Gable.
Yep.
And, you know, from Humboldt, won a couple state titles, I believe. Just you can tell going back, just a hard-nosed, tough guy that cares about Iowa. You know, he mentioned in statements, the statements that we saw, how much it'll mean to him to be pretty close to family.
Yep.
And
kind of the Paul Rhodes story a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And a guy that just, when you could take a Virginia Tech program that wasn't doing much and get it more or less into top five territory that Iowa State should be in year after year, that's saying something. Now, he's going to retain those recruiting ties to the East, which you need nowadays. You can't rely just on Iowa kids. As great a state as this is for wrestling, you know, a lot of your elite athletes are in Ohio, Pennsylvania, out there,
even
in the East Atlantic coast to some degree.
I'm reading here at Virginia, because he came before Virginia Tech. He was a high school coach out there. And he coached, what, like 69 champions out there, state champions?
I think they won 10 state titles or something like that as a team.
So I would imagine there's some good wrestlers in Virginia as well.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got, you're going to get the best of Iowa. And you, what, I mean, look, when Gable went to Iowa, I know that's like heresy to Iowa State fans, rightly so. But he's so good. That, and he did so much for Iowa State that I don't think there was a lot of animosity toward him.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Cale, I think there's some animosity for leaving Iowa State for Penn State, which is a very different thing than going to Iowa. I think having two guys that wrestled at Iowa under Gable in state, you know, Brands at Iowa, Dresser now at Iowa State, just is going to fuel that rivalry. Now what they need to fuel the rivalry more is to retain some of these recruits, maybe add to that recruiting class. They've got a really nice freshman class. I mean, it's a bit of a rebuilding job, but it's not that far off from being in that conversation for – I think very quickly they could be a top 10 team again and not too far down the road in that top five and occasionally knocking on the door for the national championship. That's it's a huge hire, and kudos for Jamie Pollard and everyone involved for landing a guy of his caliber.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit here, Rob, and tell you that I am a huge wrestling follower. I enjoy watching wrestling, and I'm a bandwagon fan at wrestling. When they were good.
I think most people are, yeah.
I'm watching it. I'm watching the Iowa, and I'm paying attention to how they're doing at Nationals. Last couple of years, I haven't paid attention at all. I just haven't. I look at it from a very simple point of view. Here's an Iowa guy. I believe he won, what, two national championships at Iowa?
Big, might have been one.
Big Ten, I think, twice. I think he was a Big Ten champion twice. He comes and takes over Virginia Tech program that when Brands left, Brands took pretty much most of the talent with him to Iowa.
Yep.
So he starts 6-12, 7-9. And then, boom, the third year they're 20-2.
Yep.
And if you look at how they finish in the NCAA tournament every year, I mean, they continuously just got better throughout his time there. He's 160-51 with a 75% winning, and that's at Virginia Tech. I got to think Iowa State's a better job. I got to think it attracts them more history. I think he can win more here. I'm excited about it. The one thing I'm just – he's getting paid 7 years, $2.25 million. And I know Iowa State's in a better financial spot now than they were with Cale Sanderson, but one of the big things with Cale Sanderson is what we always heard is Penn State paid him a lot of money. I believe this right here, his base salary is higher than Cale Sanderson's at Penn State. It's a little surprising.
Yeah, yeah. And I will say also for Cale, though, I mean, that's such a hotbed now for wrestling out there in Ohio. So
see,
he knew.
I think he called
it a sleeping giant out there. He did not. Cale is not the type of guy that loves being out. He had to be kind of a people person as the coach. He was sort of an ambassador for Iowa State as well as coaching the wrestling program. I don't think he enjoyed that part. I think he just wanted to be into the wrestling stuff.
Okay, so I can understand that. That everyone always brings up the, well, there's so much recruiting over in Penn State, the Penn State area territory for him. I just don't buy that at all because he's Cale Sanderson. There's not one bigger name for these kids in recruiting than Cale Sanderson right now because Dan Gable's gone. Dan Gable was the big name before, right? Now Cale Sanderson, he's the guy who was on the Wheaties box. Never lost in college. Gold medal winner. Cale Sanderson is the guy in wrestling as far as a name standpoint, right? If he was at Iowa State still and he's going over and recruiting those kids in the eastern part of he's still bringing them in here.
I'm saying that's just a part of it. And I think one big part, the bigger part, was he doesn't like being a
fair.
I don't want to say yes man, but just a glad hander.
That's,
you know,
fair.
Out and doing that stuff all the time. He just wants to be in the room working with guys.
Yep.
And they were going to afford him the opportunity to do that over there, and obviously to great success. They just got a big win over number one Oklahoma State in the national duels.
Coming back to Dresser here, I think it's a good hire. It looks like everyone that I've followed that knows wrestling on Twitter, they love it. They absolutely love it. So I'm excited about it, and I'm very happy to see Iowa State putting wrestling as a priority. Mm-hmm. You know, because it just, to me, there's too much history there for us to Iowa State to say, well, wrestling's kind of going away. It's not as big as it used to be nationally. Well, it might not be nationally, but it still is here in the state of Iowa. Put forth a little bit more money. Let's build a winner here. And just get back in Nationals having a chance to win a championship. You know, you might not win every year, but put yourself in a position there in the last day where you're maybe top five, like you said, and you got, if a couple wrestlers win a couple tough matches, who knows, maybe you win it. That's all I want. You know, something to follow there for those, for down the stretch, because right now, what's Iowa State's record this year?
What did they finish, 1-12 in duels? Now, I still think they've got some wrestlers who can All-American at Nationals. And that's another thing, you know, that's what should be your focus. I mean, but you can't constantly lose dual meets at the same time, too. I think most seasons, one a notable exception for Jackson, they did better at Nationals than they did from a dual standpoint. At least most of the time,
yeah,
they did. Now, did they do well enough? Obviously not. But one, another thing that Dresser has and that he can tap into even more than Jackson as a native Iowan is the story of Iowa State. He can sell that story. He can, when he goes on the road, he can talk about Dan Gable. Not that Jackson and it didn't, and his staff and all that, but the deeper connection of being a guy born in this state. And the story, you mentioned the tradition, that has to be played up through the roof, because you know, when all is said and done, we all respond to stories. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a story, your case isn't nearly as compelling. Whether you're trying to make a sale, whether you're trying to you know, get people interested in, heck, a TV show, whether you're trying to get interested in a wrestling program. So I think that's going to be a huge key, that passionate connection to the story that's been there since he can probably, you know, his first memory,
yep,
as a human, is going to be taking that on the road and connecting with people that way. I think is going to be really interesting to see how that plays out, and exciting for Iowa State wrestling to see maybe Hilton get packed for a big meet instead of, you know, 2,000-3,000 people.
I agree. Get back to where Iowa State versus Iowa is must-watch TV. Or you got to go there. You know, you got to be there, mm-hmm, for it. I mean, to me, it used to always be. I used to always tune in and watch the whole,
yep,
the whole match.
Yep.
Haven't for 4 or 5 years now. All right. Well, just to transition off that quick before we end this podcast here. Big weekend, again, I think, for Iowa State recruiting. They have some visitors there. Anybody, I had a couple people, Rob, that just reached out to me asking about the On the Trail podcast, which we're not doing right now. If anyone's got any specific recruiting questions, shoot us something on Twitter, on Cyclone Fanatic, get on there, make a thread. We'll try to find out the answers for you. We'll see if we can get a little information on that. The only thing, big thing that I noticed is Iowa State's number one priority at quarterback, Brennan Armstrong, who was just on a visit here a couple weeks ago, committed to PJ Fleck in Minnesota this last week.
And he can now row the boat, too.
He can row the boat.
50 grand?
Yeah. Oh, paid over the next 5 years, 10 grand a year,
something like that, yeah.
You know, part of me, this is my question for you on this. Obviously, PJ Fleck's big name right now. He's a hot coach, and he's recruiting really well. I think young athletes would like playing for a guy like that. So it's, mm-hmm, not surprising that Brennan Armstrong would go there. So I'm not trying to make an excuse here. I'm just wondering if you think this played anything into it at all. Iowa State, the same week that they got Brennan Armstrong in, I believe, they got a commitment from Dwayne Mathis, who's a 2019 kid.
Yeah.
Do you think going forward that's going to be a problem for Iowa State attracting a 2018 quarterback, knowing that they already got a commitment from a 2019 kid?
If it is, then you don't want that kid on your team.
Boom. Glad we think alike. And I'm not saying that with Brennan Armstrong at all. I'm not saying that reason he didn't. I think it's one thing to point out is
Minnesota has a lot to offer. I mean, they got a lot of resources. It's a fun place to be. You're the Minneapolis St. Paul
area. I love
area.
Minneapolis.
And it's a program that they've had a couple of decent teams in the last maybe decade, but it's really been down, and it should never really be down. So especially, well, I won't say that. So they're going to be on the rise, and there's a lot of excitement around it. So there's a lot of appeal there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, if you had any athlete that says at any position, let's say I'm a defensive tackle, and, oh, my gosh, they just recruited a defensive tackle for the next class, and you're worried about that, then you shouldn't be, you know.
You're not the guy that Matt Campbell's looking for.
He's certainly not the one he's looking for.
With the competitiveness.
Yeah.
The only difference to me is at quarterback position, typically you're only going to see them recruit one a class. You know what I mean? And only one can be on the field at a time. We're wide receivers, three or four on the field at a time. Defensive tackles, two on the field. So quarterback is, to me, it is a little bit more where quarterback's got to look at it and see the kind of the depth chart and how it kind of works out. You know, because you got to be smart. I mean, you want to go compete, but at the same time, if you're going to Ohio State and they just started a redshirt freshman and you know he's going to be there next 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might want to look at going to another school.
Well, and you've got Zeb Nolan, too, was forced to redshirt. You're not sure that he was necessary. I think they ideally wanted to redshirt him, given what they had. But the injury necessitated that happening. You're going to have 4 years of him. You got Devin Moore.
Yep.
Then you got the Dwan kid in 2019. I mean, you've got potentially stuff slotted out. But at the same time, those guys don't always always pan out. You hope that they do. Well, but if you're a 2018 kid, you're going, okay, I might be competing with a couple of guys. Well, maybe I've got a chance to beat him out, or maybe when that guy's in his fourth year, I start my last two.
In my opinion, this 2018 quarterback, I was thinking go trying to get a big-time kid and sell him on the fact that, hey, you get here, Jacob Park's going to be a senior. You redshirt that first year, and then you're competing, sure, with Zeb and Devin Moore, but you're competing with two guys that probably haven't played, and if they played, it's been, you know, backup minutes, more than likely, and barring an injury. But that's what you're selling to them. You're selling, hey, you could compete with guys that have that don't have a leg up on you because they've already got game experience.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big time sell. I just thought it was interesting. I just, you know, quarterbacks to me are such a – it's one of those positions where guys have to look at depth charts just a little bit more because only one guy can play at a time.
Yep.
But yeah, big weekend up in Ames. I think they got a couple more visitors. Obviously, basketball, I think they have a couple visitors coming up as well. So if you're in Hilton, be loud. The team, let's beat Baylor.
Yeah. Five in a row is
– I just – nah.
And, you know, to lose to them at home – the last
two times.
Couple years. Yeah, that's...
And I don't remember the game.
You've already lost a couple... I mean, what, you've lost Cincinnati at home. You've lost West Virginia at home. You've lost Kansas at home. That's... End that right there.
Cincinnati, to me, is still the worst loss of the year. I think I say this every week. People are probably...
Because they let Cincinnati completely control the game, even though they were in a good, decent position to win it.
Up six with, late. Like a minute or 2 minutes to go in that game and lost.
Cincinnati completely dictated the tempo and everything else.
When you're in Hilton and you hold a team to like 54 points or whatever it was a regulation, you should win that game by 10, 15, 20 points.
Yeah.
And we just, that game makes me sick.
Let's not talk about that now.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, thanks to everyone for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon as Chris Williams and I will be on CFTV Live breaking down Iowa State's big win and looking ahead to the week coming up. Thursday night, we have the radio show on 1460 KXNO. Brent Bloom is gone. I think he's going to a Higgins party.
Higgins appreciation party.
Higgins appreciation party where all the people there are going to be wearing officiating costumes and breaking down game film as far as
hair.
How good a job Higgins is doing as far as calling blocks and charges in his proper form.
It's kind of a cult. Don't they do some rituals while they're there too? I'm not sure.
I think they do. I think the rituals, they have some sort of dance they do, and it's all around referee like moves.
They're all blowing whistles
in unison. It's very, very disturbing, but something Bloom really enjoys. So Bloom will not be there on Thursday night. I know Kirk Holland will be there filling in. Kirk will be breaking down the analytics that show Iowa State's winning the national championship. I don't know that for sure, Rob. I'm just assuming. That's what's going to happen. So, yeah, big week ahead. Tune in. Jump on CycloneFanatic.com, too. And let's get some positive threads going on the forums right now. We've won four in a row. It should be all sunshine on CycloneFanatic.com right now.
Yeah, why not?
I don't know why not. So, all right.
Get it rolling.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks to Heartland Flag, HeartlandFlagPoles.com for sponsoring this podcast. And we'll see you next week.